When life brings the blah, add more yabba dabba doo with some tasty fruity pebbles. Early morning meeting, blah. Someone brought the pebbles, yabba dabba doo. Run errands, blah. Head to the store for pebbles, yabba dabba doo. Fruity pebbles, less blah, more yabba dabba doo. Pick up Pebbles cereal today. Yabba dabba doo and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements. Copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Kira Mangan is with me now, though, in studio. It gives me great pleasure to welcome her to the show. People will recognise her name. Kira was raped at a house party in County Mayo more than 10 years ago and has been speaking about the psychological stress, not just of that incident, but of the almost never-ending wait for justice is what it must have felt like, given how long it took. Kira, you're very welcome to studio.
Thank you for coming in to us.
I mean, as much as you're comfortable with, can you just remind us a little bit about the incident and what happened?
Yeah, so I was raped by a former colleague of mine at a house party. It was a drugged rape. And I suppose I navigated the justice system then for about 8 years.
Yeah,
up until just recently there last month.
When it happened and when you initially went to the Gardaí, I mean, had you any preconceptions about how long this would all take or what would happen next? I know you were very young at the time, so maybe you didn't.
I knew it was going to take a long time. It also took me 5 years to even get the courage to go to the guards. My family would have been really supportive and they never put me under any pressure whatsoever. But no, I didn't think it would take so long. Now, COVID got in the way as well. And then one time the judge wasn't able to sit on the case. We tried to go to the proposed trial three times, but we were sent back. So it was just back and forth until we finally secured a trial date.
And tell me what that's like from a, you know, a victim point of view. I guess people who work in the legal system maybe are used to that, you know, things getting adjourned or getting kicked back. But they're not kind of, they don't have this emotional build up to the day that, that you might have where you expect suddenly something's going to happen and then there's kind of a lot of legal muttering. You probably don't understand half of what's going on and suddenly it's been adjourned.
Yeah, it's a emotional roller coaster, but it's also a financial roller coaster on the family as well. So, you know, the only person's costs that are covered is the victims. It doesn't bring into account the victims' families. So my family, we're not from Dublin. So we were travelling up, booking hotels three times up and down. That was an extreme expense on our family. And then the only cost that was covered was mine. So it's not only the emotional roller coaster that you're on, it's that financial thing as well. And then you arrive there to the court, you have the cameras all in your face and you're just, you know, on edge and you're gearing up for a trial and then you're sent home that day again.
And how
three times.
How dispiriting did that get, say, by the third time?
Yeah, because your life is on hold. You know, I'm not going on holidays with my friends. I'm not, you know, making plans in advance for anything because it was just always, no, I have this trial coming up again. And like, it's the psychological stress in the back of your mind as well. And also, you know, you don't know if you're going to get justice and you're preparing for, you know, your whole world to collapse if this doesn't go the way you deserve it to go.
Yeah. And how much support or otherwise did you feel you got from the court service, from the judicial system?
I got support from the guards. Yeah, from and it really does depend. But my Gardaí were so supportive and so helpful. The victim liaisons. Yeah. The courts, they don't really. You're just a number. You're just a ticket. Your life doesn't really matter too much to them. They're just, you know, rolling on day by day. Even, you know, to the point where I just find that the whole system is so unvictim centered. You know, even after you leave the court, no one tells you that you can sign up for the prison service to be, you know, notified of your prisoner's movements. No one tells you this information. And I also had with my charity organization that I run, we had an advocacy group there on Saturday. And it came to my attention that victims are actually entitled to a compensation, victims of crime compensation, which I never knew about either. Like, no one tells you these things.
Yeah, you're just expected to know them.
And I think we have a right to information. And we're not being told these vital pieces of information as victims of crime.
Tell me a bit about the Garda liaison officer and the ways in which they helped you.
They just helped. They were mostly mainly support from my family, to be honest. Yeah, it was just they were the point of contact. You know, they wouldn't they'd be like the little buffer between the detective and yourself. So the family liaison officer would be a bit more compassionate and, you know, not like matter of fact with the investigation, so to say. So they're a bit more of emotional support there.
So this is 2013 was that house party that you mentioned. And there was a kind of a delay in during which you said you kind of had to pluck up the courage. Tell me a little bit about before we got there, because, you know, before we got to judicial systems and all of those delays and the expectation the trial would be up and running three times before being sent home. But that 5 year period before you reported it, what were you going through on a personal level? And how often in those 5 years did you kind of sit down and think, I'm going to do something about this and then not do it? Or did you at all until the 5 years were up?
It was obviously in the back of my mind. But in those 5 years, I was going through complete emotional turmoil. You know, I would have been getting down, you know, with the wrong crowd. I was, you know, taking drugs. I was drinking way too much. But I did go to a counsellor and she said, why don't you write a letter to the perpetrator of this crime? And I did, but with never with the intention of sending it, of course. And I sent, I wrote the letter and I put it away. And then I suppose my sister was getting ready to work in the same place that I was working in. And that's the point when I had to tell my family because she was going to be going in there with the perpetrator who was still working there. So, yeah, I went upstairs and I found this letter and it was basically the bulk for my Garda statement. I was so, so grateful I had that letter.
Well, how did your family react when you told them?
My mom collapsed on the floor. My neighbours next door had to come in and take all my siblings. My dad just went off in the car just to blow off steam. And we just, that was just the moment we all went into complete turmoil, you know. We were never the same as a family since. And then we called the guards that day and we reported the crime.
How conscious were you before you told them that as soon as you did that, not only your life was going to change, but, you know, that their life was changed, that this would be something that would impact everyone, you know? And was that something that made you not make the decision for a while, that this is something that's everyone is going to be impacted by?
Yeah, of course. I didn't want to hurt them. You know, when I told my mom and when she called for my neighbor next door, she came running over and she said, what's wrong? What's wrong? My mom said, every mother's worst nightmare. And she knew straight away what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
And how do you feel now that you're on, I won't say the other side of it. You're probably never fully on the other side of it. I mean, it profoundly impacts you, always will. But I mean, on the other side of it from the judicial point of view, because there was an appeal as well, and that appeal was rejected. Mm-hmm. So that it's done and dusted, the legal process, isn't it?
He can appeal and appeal.
Okay.
So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that he doesn't do that.
Okay.
But yeah, never ends.
And is that how it feels? It feels now. Never ends.
I mean, you can't really. You just hope. You hope that it's over. But yeah, when I got the appeal dismissed, the barrister just said, "I'm sorry, I have to let you know that they can appeal and appeal." Mm. And I was like, "Well, that doesn't surprise me at all."
Yeah. And where does that leave you in terms of? trying to get on with your life?
We don't get on with our life. We actually just move forward with the trauma. So you never kind of get over the trauma, so to say. You just find ways to live with it every day. And it does eventually get easier and you do grow around your trauma and you get, you know, get stronger, and it doesn't show up and impact your life as much as it did before. But this is, you know, we are serving life sentences. Obviously, he's going to come out one day in August 2028. You know, I have that to worry about. But, you know, I'm so grateful that I have other survivors in my life now who will also have to deal with that aspect of things as well. Because once that perpetrator goes to jail and you stand outside that court, you start your own time TikTok, you know.
Yeah.
You wait till they're out then. Yeah.
And the organization then, the charity that you've been running, and that you've been dedicating so much time to, how much of that was about, obviously a huge amount of it is about helping other people, because you realise kind of what help you needed. I assume though part of it is a bit of about, it's kind of a coping, it's a way of you of maybe directing your energy, all of that negative energy from something like this into something positive, is it?
Yeah, I definitely feel there's such great healing in channeling your pain into something, you know, purposeful and something meaningful. And, you know, this charity not only helps other people, but it also helps me as well. I feel like this is my purpose. I know that I'm really good in the position that I am to be able to offer this service to other survivors. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's something that, you know, lights my soul. And I've poured my heart into it. And I'm just so excited about where Beyond Surviving is going to go. We're getting support and stuff. And we've been praised, I suppose, a little bit for our approach within the sector, as, you know, the next step for survivors. That's one thing that I noticed when I did leave the judiciary system, was that, you know, survivors get to the stage where they're no longer in crisis. But if the services end there, essentially what we're saying is that's as far as you're ever going to get. But survivors don't deserve to just survive every day. They deserve to reclaim their life and move far beyond surviving.
And that's what the ethos, the kind of driving force behind Beyond Surviving is.
Yeah, we're entirely survivor-led as well, which means not that I'm a survivor. That doesn't make it survivor-led. It means that the survivors themselves play an active role in shaping the organisation, designing and bringing forward the things that really meet their needs and what they want.
And if people want to find out more, is there a website yet up and running for it?
Yeah, we have charity recognition and our website is beyondsurviving.ie.
BeyondSurviving.ie. Kira Magnan. Kira, thanks a million for coming into us and sharing the story. And I know, you know, you've been speaking out about it since the dismissal of that appeal, the first appeal, and hopefully the only appeal, but it hangs over you. But listen, it's brave every time you do it. So we really, really do appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
BeyondSurviving.ie, that website again.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
When life brings the blah, add more Yabba Dabba Doo with some tasty fruity pebbles. Early morning meeting, blah. Someone brought the pebbles, Yabba Dabba Doo. Run errands, blah. Head to the store for pebbles, Yabba Dabba Doo. Fruity pebbles, less blah, more Yabba Dabba Doo. Pick up Pebbles cereal today. Yabba Dabba Doo and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements. Copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.